in England, they died, and Nathan Mayer Rothschild was regarded as the remaining major banker in England. And what we'll see coming up is how he gets control of the Bank of England.
Okay, well, now we get 1811. The charter for the Rothschild Bank of the United States runs out if the Congress votes against it, its renewal. And Nathan Rothschild is not amused, and he states...
Well, this is... We go back to... This is basically the renewal now. Alexander Hamilton set up 1791, 20-year charter up for renewal in 1811. Nathan Mayer Rothschild said when Congress weren't keen to renew it, either the application for renewal of the charter is granted, or the United States will find itself involved in a most disastrous war. The United States decide not to renew the charter, and Nathan Mayer Rothschild issues another threat in which he states, teach those impudent Americans a lesson, bring them back to colonial status. And what happens the following year is, backed by the Rothschild money, the British declare war on the United States. And the plan here was to cause the United States to build up such a debt in fighting the war that they had no option but to surrender to the British and therefore allow the charter of the Rothschild-owned First Bank of the United States to be renewed. But the British were still busy fighting Napoleon and they weren't able to mount much of an assault. So the war ends in 1814, a lot of bloodshed on both sides as usual, but America is undefeated, so the bank is essentially up in the air. It's not been renewed.
A wonderful, wonderful moment in history, because we know that there were a couple of other times in the 1830s, 40s, and 50s where they attempted and failed to get the bank back in, and of course Andrew Jackson, which we talked about last file, kept them out of our lives for a very long time. Okay, on September 19th, Meyer Amstel dies. In his will, he lays out specific laws that the House of Rothschild are to follow. Let's talk about these.
Well, these are interesting because this just goes to show how this group operates and how it's all about them, it's all about their control, it's all about keeping other people out. There are key points. The first one is all key positions in the family business are only to be held by family members. People may remember Muhammad Rafik talking about how N.M. Rothschild & Sons in London is a sole trader.
Yep.
Well, a sole trader is generally somebody who's got a fruit and vegetable market stall. That's a sole trader, not somebody with a billion or trillion dollar bank. And the reason that he is because he doesn't have to audit his accounts. And so the accounts can be kept secretive. Yep. The second part of this is only male members of the family are allowed to participate in the family business. Now here there is a report of a sixth secret bastard son, and I mentioned the five daughters here, but I've never found anything. I wanted to mention that here, but I found no further evidence on who that is, the supposed sixth son. The third point of this will is the family is to intermarry with its first and second cousins to preserve the family fortune. And in the Jewish Encyclopedia of 1905, of the 58 Rothschild marriages to that date, so from, you know, the first Rothschild we talked about in 1750 to 1905, there were 58 marriages. Exactly half, 29, have been to first cousins, which is inbreeding, which we know can cause insanity.
Psychopathic behavior could be
absolutely
expected.
The fourth part of the will, no public inventory of the Rothschild estate is to be published. So again, keep quiet what we really own. The fifth part is no legal action is to be taken with regard to the value of the inheritance. So let's not have any infighting amongst the Rothschilds. We all have to stand together. And the sixth part was the eldest son of the eldest son is to become the head of the family. And this could be overturned when the majority of the family agreed. And actually, this was put into effect straight away when Nathan Mayer Rothschild, who's the guy that we just talked about, threatening America and getting behind the British military to attack America for not renewing their first bank of the United States, he is elected as his father's successor. He wasn't the eldest. I think he was third or fourth eldest.
Well, now let's we already talked a bit about the theft of the money from
yeah,
from the Hess. Yeah, now let's go on here to 1815, they worked to supply gold to both Wellington's army and England and Napoleon's army through France and the policy of funding both sides. So let's go on to this here.
Well, what they're doing is we've got Nathan. Basically, the five Rothschild brothers were sent to different parts of Europe. And we've got Nathan Rothschild financing Wellington's army in England. And Napoleon's army is being funded through Jacob Rothschild in France. So essentially, this is where they're funding, well, the first indicator of where they fund both sides in wars. And the reason they do it is because they generate debt. And they're risk-free. And the reason that they're risk-free is that there's a... Some people may be aware of this, but there is an actual agreement worldwide where when somebody beats another country in a war, then it's their responsibility to honour the debts of that country.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter who wins, you'll still make all your money. And what we also cover here is... the banks that the Rothschilds have got around Europe, they set up a postal service of fast couriers. Now, what these couriers did was they always stayed one step ahead of the sort of other couriers that were around, you know, government to go from one government to another, etc. Because, you know, there was no telephones or anything then. People would have to find out information and run back to a country to tell the people in another country about it. And what we've got is these couriers are the only merchants allowed to pass through the English and French blockades. So essentially they're giving inside information as to how the war's going between, you know, Nathan Mayer Rothschild and Jacob Rothschild. And so with that information, he's using that for insider dealing as to what stock to buy on the stock exchange, etc. And this is where we have the situation where Nathan Rothschild gets control of the British Central Bank. Rather than read it through, what's essentially happened here is the famous story is that Rothschild is at his position on the stock exchange in the UK, and he stands there looking all depressed and what have you, and he starts selling his stock. And all the others, who are far smaller bankers, traders than him, they see that he's doing this, and they realise that the British have lost the war and that Napoleon has won, and so they start selling everything. And then when it gets low enough, Nathan alerts the people working for him to start buying it all up. And so what essentially he's doing is he's driving the price down to buy the, so that then he could buy the lot cheap. So he's selling at a loss initially to buy everything and still have money to spare. He actually knows that Napoleon has lost the war.
Now, is it possible that he brought Napoleon out of his first exile to do this very dirty deed?
It's possible. I mean, I didn't uncover that, but of course that's certainly possible.
Yeah.
But the key here is that, it shows how much influence he had. People were aware that he had an intelligence, we call it a postal network, but essentially it's an intelligence network going. And people are following what he does because he's the top player there, and he's using it to get control of all the money. And this is, you know, probably the biggest insider dealing event that's gone on in history. And this event was actually reported on some years, I think in the early 1900s, in the American paper. And the Rothschild family wanted to get that story taken away, and they went to court. And they lost.
Yeah.
So, but of course, again, it's not something that's going to be taught in the... Yeah, here, if we go over to on page 24, I'll just run... 100 years later, the New York Times ran a story stating that Mayer Rothschild's grandson had attempted to secure a court order to suppress publication of a book which had this insider trading story in it. The Rothschild family claimed the story was untrue and libellous, but the court denied the Rothschild request and ordered the family to pay all court costs.
All right, well, there you go. Now, that must have been because there was substantial evidence to prove it.
Absolutely.
Well, here we got, you know, this is very interesting here because Switzerland has always been seen as good guys in the world. They, you know, they'll those those lovable characters over there in Central Europe who make watches and, you know, have these, what do we call those things there? They wear lederhosen and they blow these big horns and they're just nice people. The fact of the matter is that they've been used by these crooks as a safe haven, as the pre-Israel country. In other words, this was like Israel today, back in that day, a place they could go where they were immune from prosecution and immune from being tracked or controlled.
Yes, and what we've got this year is the Congress of Vienna.
Yeah.
And what happened here is this is the Rothschilds' first attempt to, you know, sort of form of world government, which would have been more of a covering Europe at this stage, but they already knew that they could get America back in the bag at any point, and if they could unify Europe, then they could have all the armies of Europe, send them over to America, get their bank set up there, and then, you know, they're in again. But what happened was at the start of the Congress, the Rothschilds managed to get Switzerland declared forever neutral in wars. And this is a point that a lot of people say it, how come Switzerland are always neutral in a war? You know, they don't get into World War One, World War Two. They're always neutral. And the reason is because this is where the finance is pouring out of.
Well, it seems like, and of course we know that even today, you know, when we look back at history and we see Tsar Alexander's attempt to stop these people, what it actually ended up doing was having him turn into a target for these crooks. And from what I've learned of late, it's very possible that that Putin himself is Jewish. I know Medvedev is a Jew, the new prime minister of Russia. So the fact is, Russia has never been the control of Russia has never been relinquished since the 1917 war. And I mean, it makes sense to me because there have been so many opportunities for these people to make right the world, and they've passed on it. So it seems to me that they're still in league with these crooks.
Oh, yes. I mean, we just need to look at the state of the world today. And I completely agree with you, Darren. And all we can really do is try and get the information out in the past. And, you know, it is the same story that plays out over and over again. And we're seeing that today. It's on a wider scale. We've got more of an opportunity than the public had back then because we do have the ability to, you know, communicate with one another. If we can't find friends that are interested in this sort of subject, we've got the internet, we've, you know, different people that we can, you know, communicate with and really try and get this word out.
Well, so we're doing our best, aren't we?
Yeah.
Well, let's go on here to Carl Rothschild, sent to Naples, Italy, and what does he do here? He goes to do business with Pope Gregory, doesn't he?
Yeah, Karl Rothschild, yeah, he was one of the ones that went over to, he was the guy that went over to Italy. And what we've got here, hold on, I've lost my page. What page are you on, Darryl?
Yeah, 27.
Right, okay, hold on. Yeah, I'd like to jump back at some point, but if I can just cover this. As you say, Karl Rothschild, he does business with the Vatican and Pope Gregory, and he gets the Order of St. George bestowed upon him. This is the one we mentioned earlier, because you were saying about 1840, 1850, getting control of the money out of the Vatican. But here we've got indicators when the Pope receives Karl Rothschild, he gives him this hand to kiss rather than the customary toe to kiss, which caused concern with regard to the extent of his power over the Vatican. But if we could jump back quickly.
I missed something here on the French going into free fall here.
Yeah, what it was 1816, because just to give a bit of continuity for listeners, because they'll be aware of Andrew Jackson killing the central bank of the United States, and what actually happens is the one that Hamilton set up, 1791, that doesn't get renewed. So in 1812 there's war going back and forth, then to 1814, then in 1816 the American Congress passed a bill permitting yet another Rothschild dominated central bank, and this one's called the Second Bank of the United States and gets another 20 year charter. And this sort of fills in the blanks for people as to how this is the bank that Jackson then gets rid of in 1836.
And then, okay, so, 1818 here, they pull the same fast one on France, send it in buying French bonds, and then what happens from there?
Well, of course, the French had to get massive loans to rebuild after their defeat at Waterloo. So the Rothschild agents got bought vast amounts of their bonds, called the Valley to Increase. Then they dumped a lot on the open market, causing the Valley to plummet, and then stepped in to get control of the French money supply, again buying it cheap again, so they could get hold of not just the bonds that they'd inflated, but everything.
Yeah.
And that's what they did there, in a similar way to what they did to the Bank of England 6 years earlier.
Well, and what you'll find is that's the period of Victor Hugo writing about Les Misérables, where the French lived in a totalitarian state where mass poverty and starvation were the rule. And, of course, if you know the story of Les Misérables, where Jean Valjean and the running around the countryside seeing abject poverty everywhere, you know, we're talking about people starving to death everywhere, but you'll also note that same kind of starvation was going on at the same time in Britain, and it was written about by Charles Dickens, and he also credits Zionist Jews and Judaism for being behind the implosion and the abject poverty that was being experienced in Britain, doesn't he?
He does, and I think if you look at some of this artwork of these moneylenders at that time, whether it's out of France, Germany, England, wherever, it's all got that same sort of caricature on it,
yeah.
The sort of people that we're looking at.
Well, it's awful, you know, here we go with, okay, the Emperor of Austria takes, what, five Rothschild brothers. This is where they become de Rothschild, the barons and whatnot, yeah?
Yeah, Baron Rothschild and what have you. Nathan Mayer Rothschild was the one who chose not to take up the title. We mentioned him having his first son earlier, which was Lionel, and Lionel is the one who goes on to become the Member of Parliament but doesn't take his seat because he won't swear an oath to Christianity.
Okay, now we got the Rothschild takeover of the finances of the Catholic Church happening in 1823.
23.
Now, I said it was about 1840 or 50, so I'm actually off by about 20 years. And this would explain why so many people think the Catholic Church is behind a lot of the criminal activity in the world. But in fact, it was bought and paid for by Zionist Jewish money back in the 1820s. So this is a very clear indication of who really runs things. We already know that the Grand Orient Lodge and the Masonic Lodges were controlled. We know that New Bohemians were controlled. We know that some of the organizations set up after the fact, which Oppenheimer set up, like and Cecil B. Rhodes, the Round Table. We can go all the way. Bilderberg, doesn't matter where you go. It's all rooted back to these same people. Sir Walter Scott publishes a 9-volume set on the life of Napoleon. Why is that important?
Well, it's important because he states that the French Revolution was actually planned by the Illuminati and financed by the Rothschilds. And what we've got here is it's just further evidence on what we've already discussed about Robeson writing his book, etc., etc. It's all out there. But these books are the sort of books that they're not going to be reprinting today, and this is why you're putting up all the work that you can put up with the Nestor Websters and the Douglas Reeds and the Dikeys and the different people like that.
Yeah.
Because the book's Archibald Moore Ramsay, the information is out there, but you're not going to get it. You might be able to go to a shop and buy a book by Stephen King or something that'll just keep you all dumbed down, but you're not going to be able to read anything of real true history, because then you know, you will know what the past is about and you'll recognize what is going on today, and you may actually be able to present a threat to these people.
Well, here's the interesting thing. I took a course at NYU, a French Revolution and Napoleonic Wars, and of course the scholar to teach me this class was a Harvard doctor from Harvard. Her name was Darlene Levy, and she has written 11 books on the French Revolution, and she is considered one of the leading scholars in the world on the French Revolution. Funny, though, she never mentions anything about the Rothschilds financing it. Is it in fact that all French Revolution scholars happen to be from the Jewish community? Probably so, ladies and gentlemen. check your local university and check who does the French Revolution in the history courses and find out if they are, in fact, from the Jewish community. Mine was, and this woman was the most odious human being I ever studied under. I actually was thrown out of her classroom for being so disgusted with the way she taught. And it was a tough one because she really tried to fail me after that, but that's another story for another day. Darlene Levy, send her an email. Say, Daryl says hi, you piece of dirt. Anyway, yeah, 1828, after 12 years of the second bank, what happens here?
Well, I think that we're now up to our last file, because this is when Andrew Jackson gets nominated to run for president. And he actually gets into the presidency and roots out a lot of these people from government,
yep.
Firing 11,000 employees of the federal government that he could tell were ensconced in this conspiracy.
Well, and look, and look, you know, everybody of the day was probably saying it's not fair, it's not right, but he kept the country free of these criminals for 70 years. Now again.
Yeah.
You mentioned it. If not everybody has done good things, and I have pointed out that Mr. Jackson's actions against the Native American Indians, which my grandmother happens to be a half Wampanoag, so I take that a little personally. But at the same time, as an American, I have to say that that was one great thing he did. So the fact is, we are facing a real mess in the world today as we speak, Andrew. You can see it coming. Anybody with eyes can. It looks like they're going to implode the financial system and go back and buy assets at pennies on the dollar. It looks like they're doing the same scam over again, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. It was interesting today, funny enough. We know all about Mugabe over in Zimbabwe, and I saw some story. Apparently, I think a sort of pound note over there is something like 1 billion.
Yeah.
And so what they're doing is they're changing it to a one now. They're going to take all the noughts off and reprint them.
Yeah.
So, and you know, it's done like it's going to simplify things. And apparently they say that because there's so many noughts after it, it's becoming difficult to administer with, you know, but it's just a great big devaluation exercise. And they're trying to hide it. And of course, where I read this was on BBC, that attacking most of the time. But now they're looking at this, and they won't attack anything to do with money systems because, you know, they don't want us to find out about it.
Well, you know, I got to say that doing this book in pieces like this has been a real learning experience for me. I read the book, and now going through it the way we have done it is just strengthened my knowledge about so many of these things. And you know, what I urge the people to do, and I'm sure you do too, Andrew, is to continue researching beyond what's in the book, because this book, being 300 plus pages, is only really scratching the surface of many of these conspiracies, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, the idea of the book really was, I mean, initially, like the copy that I have, and I've literally got a handful left, has no index to it. And one of the great things about when Tex Mars wanted to do it was he was going to write his own foreword. That wasn't that was fine, but the key thing was he was going to put an index to it. And it's made it so, I mean, the index on his version is over 20 pages, so it's easy to navigate around. I know you've got a copy of both.
Yeah.
But the idea behind it was to have a real, just a paperback book when I did it, that people could read through like they would a paperback, that they'd pick up the Golden Holiday, and it would be an introduction on so many subjects, and put them all in there, and there is one linkage point, and the linkage point is it links to this same group all the way through.
Yeah.
And so people can pick up, I've stated before about USS Liberty, you know, James Ennis, I believe, has written a very good book on that subject,
yeah.
Assault on the Liberty, what have you. Well, of course, that's the whole book been written on that. I've got maybe two paragraphs on one page, and then I'll move on to something else.
Yeah.
And that's simply because I want to get everything in. It didn't start out to be a book. It started out because when I was listening to lots of different people, they were basically saying different things, and you had the Alex Joneses steering you one way and this, that and the other. So that was why it started as a timeline, and it's been good. It started as a timeline with you.
Yeah.
The timeline got bigger and bigger, so I made it into a book so that people read it, because they couldn't read a whole book on screen. Then Tex Mars picked it up, then we started doing the shows and putting up a bit of the time, and that's gone back home to you, where the whole book is up now. It's in 10 parts, but it's the whole book, the same as you would get if anyone came to www.thesynagogueofsatan.com and ordered it from me. It's the same book, and on top of that you've got 10 audio files that go with each of those segments of the book. And so what would be good for the, from my point of view, that I'd like the listeners to do is, if they would like to get all these audio segments on a CD, plus all the segments of the book on a CD, and hand these out to people, you're looking at probably about 15 hours of audio, because we average about an hour and a half on each of these segments, and we've got 10 of them, and it's the last 10 that we've done. You know, get the word out to people. If you can't afford the book now, then you can get it for free online at Darryl's site. I encourage people to make a donation to Darryl so he can continue to put work like this up there and get the word out to people.
Well, I have mentioned lately, you know, that we have had a very serious slowing of help, and I attribute that probably to several factors, but the most important is financially the things are starting to get complicated here. But I hope people don't forget about me out here, because you know, I sure could use the help here. This is it's tough to keep the lights on over here, and you know, the funding goes up to Sweden to take care of the book repository that we've got as well, and many of the books that we've got on the site and are coming out. We've got more being formatted, by the way, to continue the research in this area. You know, that stuff gets paid for through your donations, and so does the bandwidth on the website, and so does our .tv, which we hope to be relaunching very shortly here. To get a some other type of streaming operation going. Our numbers are growing, Andrew. You know, we put out, in 1 month's time, we put over 240 gigabytes of information out.
Oh, that's excellent.
I don't know. Do the math. 240 gigabytes is a lot of information.
Oh, a hell of a lot. I mean, the files generally, I mean, the audio files are not going to be more than sort of...
10
you know,
or 12.
For the two of them, yeah, exactly, Meg, you know, so that's a hell of a lot that's going out there.
Well, and that's not including the thousands. We've got tens of thousands of people on BitTorrents. We have five or six BitTorrents in numbering in the many, multi-thousands going out every week. So the numbers are growing, the people are sharing this information, but we really need to start actually doubling and tripling the numbers of people that are hearing these messages, because it's really about a critical mass that needs to be formed here, and I'm hoping against hope that everybody just spends 10 minutes or 15 minutes a day to contact somebody and try to get them interested in this information. Find somebody who's really starting to be angry about the financial mess, which probably is everybody. They may be very ripe to learn the facts. They may be very ready to understand the truth, that's the person you need to give them the whole story, Andrew's book is perfect for that. Andrew, I want to thank you again for coming on today. As usual, a very provocative hour and a half file here. I look forward to doing some other things with you. I hope we can work that out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'll always be around to do any shows and be in touch and what have you. I'm pleased that we got through this, because it's been a real marathon that we've done over a period of months.
Yeah.
You know, 10 files covering the whole book.
Yeah.
And someone even put a BitTorrent out I saw a while ago, which was, it's called the Hitchcock Files or something, and it had about the first five or six from this, and I think some of the earlier ones. But again, if people want to get the text of the book from the 10 files and the text of all the different shows, but it's basically the last 10 shows that we've done on this subject. And then they've got the whole book in audio form that they can listen to in their car or on their MP3 or whatever. And then they've got the whole book that they can read as well. The book wasn't something that I did for financial gain. It was and I've actually, you know, lost money, but it was to get the word out. And it's good to have been able to do what we've done and now have it available for everybody again, and still know that there's about several thousand copies floating about all around the world, and it's waking people up every day.
Well, Andrew, thanks again. I will be in touch with you soon, my friend. And ladies and gentlemen, I want to urge you to help this French Connection juggernaut, if you will. Give me that, at least the idea of a juggernaut. I'd like it to be, at least, so maybe we can put a metal picture of a big powering movement happening here, and maybe that will come into being. We are in the tens of thousands, and we need to be in the hundreds and even the millions, and that needs to start happening now. Until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, take care of your families, and please, be well.